Welcome to Arise Life, a community of believers being equipped, empowered, and released into their destiny. For more information, go to ariselife.org or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.
Jesus. So Elijah, I did not walk through these slides, but hopefully they'll just go one after the other after the other. So you're awesome, Elijah. I appreciate you stepping into the gap. That is, I will tell you, most of the time, words, no-brainer, but sometimes Peter gets a little squirrely. So you can always pray for the word person. Awesome. I have heard so much response from the message last week on grief and disappointment. I heard the testimony from multiple people who said they were very glad they were not here and actually watched it online because that allowed them to weep their eyeballs out. Who here, during this last week or so, you've been walking through disappointment and or grief? Yeah, okay, you're not alone. You're not alone, and it's really important. As I'm killing time for these beautiful Vanna Whites or what, thank you guys. You guys are awesome. What I want you to be thinking about is so I talked about this before. If you can imagine a continuum from disappointment all the way to grief, there's this thing that happens in our heart when you face something that you expected one outcome and you get another. You expected somebody to behave a certain way and they don't, right? Like even when we lose a loved one, we expected them to be there. They're not, right? So all the way from disappointment on one end to grief on the other hand, what happens in our hearts when that happens, when we face that? What does it feel like? Heavy? What else? What's going on inside?
Empty.
I heard sad. What else?
Frozen.
What else?
Vulnerable.
Huh?
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable. Ooh, yeah.
Numb.
Numb.
Hollow.
What was that?
Hollow.
Hollow. Hollow, confused. I heard silent. What do you mean by that? That you feel God is silent or it's just silent inside?
Hard to speak.
Hard to speak. Isolated.
Alone.
You know, it's interesting. I was listening to someone. They were talking about just in neurobiology and so on and so forth. It's interesting when you and I have a bad experience of something. Like, so if I put my hand on a hot stove, what am I going to do? Some of you seem confused. Okay, okay, what would you do? Maybe you think I'm different. I don't know. If I put my hand on a stove and it's hot, I do what? I jerk back, right? I am going to do something to move away from the pain, right? From what's causing the pain. The strange thing is, so maybe you've even seen this, in recent years, in psychology, like they've said, they've discovered that loneliness is as detrimental to your health as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. That's pretty bad. Okay, but stay with me. So if I am experiencing that negative effect of loneliness, in every other area of life, when we experience pain, we back up from it. In loneliness, we back into it. It's the only area where we do exactly the opposite of what we need, right? We isolate. In my pain, I retreat. I retreat into numbness. I feel, so if you look at all these, a lot of times they start as extremely painful experiences, heavy, sad, vulnerable, confused, and then we retreat into numb, hollow, empty, isolated, alone, right? Does that make sense? Are you guys tracking with me? This is really important because you need to understand if you are going to step out of grief and into wholeness, actually walk through grief and not pull out of grief into numbness and aloneness, you and I are never going to move forward into life that God has for us, right? Because we're going to pull back from life. We're going to retreat. We're going to run away. We're going to hide. But what do we do? Who here wants to feel confused, vulnerable, sad, heavy? None of us, right? None of us want that. And so we pull back. We pull back. I had this on blast a couple times in the last week. I'm trying to remember what day that was. Friday it happened, and then yesterday it happened. I was overwhelmed with these feelings. Now, I'm going to tell you what's inside of me. You can see if it lines up with you. The feelings are something's wrong. I'm broken. Failure, me or somebody else. I'm not okay. And maybe I never will be. Right? When we feel these things, another thing that comes right on its heels and offers to come in and help us is shame. Right? Anybody had this? I should be better. I should be okay. That shouldn't have happened. Right? Or its cousin, blame. Right? You know what shame is? Shame is I'm bad. Blame is you're bad. Yeah. Right? Either way, I'm okay. We can handle this. Right? Because we talked about this last week, my desperate need to make up a story to make sense of it. Mm-hmm. Right? Because I'm not okay with these feelings. And you know the worst thing about sharing a message on grief is that when you grieve, you can't run away and hide from the very words you've spoken. And I had to sit and go, Jesus, what do you want me to know in this? And he said, it's going to be okay, but I need you to stay in this really uncomfortable place. Oh! When everything I want to do is run away, it's going to be okay. I've got you. Okay? So one of the things that he's been speaking to me strongly out of has been the book of Genesis. Now, if you've read the book of Genesis, you know, starting from chapter 12 through chapter 50, you know, it's the story of four generations of awesome people. Some of you are already getting where I'm going. What is, just throw it out. What is not, so we have these four generations. Well, I'll start out, but I need you to keep in your back of your mind. So we'll start out with the first slide. We start out with who are our first two people? Abraham and so we got Abraham and Sarah, right? Abraham and Sarah. And their story starts out at a very ripe early age of 76 and 66. They finally said yes to Jesus at 66 and 76. Means there's hope, right? And they're like, but here's the problem. All they have at this point is nothing. And God says, go out and leave the little you have. At 66, in the ancient world, for a woman not to have a child was basically to declare you're a waste of space. Anybody here suffering in a certain area and people are kind enough to keep pointing it out to you? If you've been waiting for that long, how easy is it for you to hope again? It's almost impossible, isn't it? This is what makes this so insanely, stunningly incredible. I personally think it was probably the way it rolls because Abraham was dumb enough to believe God and Sarah eventually came along. Because women, you all tend to be a little more realistic, right? You're like, ah. But okay. And he's like, God said it. And they're like, okay. As they go along the way, God, The very first encounter, God says, I'm going to bless all the world through you in Genesis 12. The world's going to be blessed through you. Is that a pretty good encouragement? You know how good it is? Every good thing in yours and my life comes from the obedience of Abraham and Sarah. Everything. You can take it back. Literally everything that good in our lives comes out of their obedience. I don't know about you, but I'm looking at their obedience and I'm like, wow, God has low standards. Right? Right? And that's why God kept saying to me, if you look at this, you're going to get hope. And I was like, I don't see hope. I see mess. He said, watch what I do. So Abraham and Sarah. So God says, I'm going to create a family line through you. It's going to be incredible. And Abraham, true to our nature, what does Abraham's first idea? Got it. It will be through Eleazar. The next slide. Eleazar is my butler because I don't have anybody in my family. Nope. Okay. Not Eleazar who works for me. It's going to be Lot, my nephew. Nope, not going to be him. Okay, not Lot. Then how about, it's not going to be Sarah. Sarah's like, I'm out. I don't have hope for this. So she offers Hagar, we get Ishmael. Okay. So if you have heard the promise of God and you tried to come up with a natural way it was going to come to pass and it didn't, or you tried to make it happen in your own strength and it didn't, there's hope. There's hope. So he stays with it. Only finally at the point where Sarah is 90 years old does Isaac arrive. And I love Isaac's name means laughter. God laughs at what we are terrified of. We are impressed with. Isaac, so we got Isaac. Whew. Wow. Sarah's barren. Suddenly we have Isaac. Next generation, right? We get Isaac marries Rebecca. Rebecca, wow, this is going to be awesome. Guess what? Rebecca's also barren. Who here has judged your parents? All of us. It's the right of being a child, right? Is I will not do it that way. Who here has done exactly what your parents did? Yeah, exactly. You know, I will not. Yes, I will, right? Literally. But here's the deal. God, we imagine when God speaks a promise, we begin to fantasize about what it's going to look like. And when it doesn't happen the way we expect, we get disappointed, right? But is God still good? Yes. See, God's after growth, we're after achievement, right? He's moving the chains because Rebecca's not as barren as long as Sarah was. Progress, family celebrates progress, yay! And if the first generation had one kid, what's the next generation got? Two, Esau and Jacob, yay! Now, there's a problem because there's two of them. A comedian used to say, he said, how many kids you got? One? Oh, you're not a parent. Why? Because if your child's in the back seat all by themselves saying, stop touching me, you have a problem, right? You know, like, you know, if they're arguing with themselves, it's a problem, right? It's the same thing as one, not as much problem. Two, already interesting, right? And that's exactly what happens because with every step up in the destiny that God's called us to, there are new problems. There are new giants. There's new issues, and you can feel like it's a failure, right? You can feel like you're failing, but guess what? Guess what? He's growing us. He's growing us forward. So Isaac, Esau, and Jacob, we know that story. Bam, they go after each other. It looks like a train wreck, and yet God's moving in it. Jacob, right after he tricks his dad and his brother out of the inheritance and is on the run because Esau's trying to kill him, he meets up with God. Come on. And there, out there, and he goes to his relative where his mama's from, his mama's brother, and he goes to marry, you guys know the story, he goes to marry Rachel, right? From the very first, he says he cried when he saw her. He's like, oh my gosh, you're incredible, right? Goes to marry her, and Laban, their father, did the switcheroo, right? And who does Jacob end up marrying? Leah. Now, I'm just going to say this without too much detail, but I cannot imagine more pain and more shame than what Leah must have felt. My father doesn't want me. My husband doesn't want me. And everybody in the world that I live in knows it. Can you imagine? How horrifying that is. How horrifying. There she is. But in that place, she cries out to God and she goes, God, my husband may not love me, but at least give me kids. And guess what it says? It says God gave her kids. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. So I was going through this. I realized something. Leah was crying out for kids, crying out to have a purpose and a destiny. Have you been in this place where all your dreams are shattered, but you still need to matter? You still need to have a purpose. You need to still have a hope. And so she goes, okay, fine, I'll take kids. And the names of the kids are amazing. You can look at that. But there's this interesting thing is, I never noticed this. Do you know who is in the line of the tribe of Judah? Jesus. The very Messiah came through what to us looks like a tragic joke. The very Messiah of the world comes through Laban's trickery, Jacob being a dingbat, and her brokenheartedness. What? What? See, one of the things God keeps showing me is he's like, you think too much of the horror and tragedy and injustice of this world, and you don't think enough of me. Because watch me, what I will do with the absolute worst situations possible, if you will surrender them to me. But failure to grieve, and in our pain, us stepping back and saying, no, that disconnects us from what God will do. Because do you know, Leah had to make herself vulnerable to hope to be able to ask God for kids. And in that place of brokenness and hurt and pain, here she's crying out to God. She wants something different. I realized something is all of what happens to us in our disappointment. Remember, we start out hurting. Right? When grief hits us, we hurt. If we don't grieve, we retreat, right? Into numbness and blame and shame. Right? Now, watch this. Why do we do this? It actually goes back to the Garden of Eden. You remember? Eve is tempted with what? The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Let me put it another way. God has said, Eve, you're made in my image. But Eve was growing into God's image every day, right? She was starting out in God's image this way. Anybody here a little more like God today, hopefully, than you were yesterday? Right? It's a matter of maturity. But the enemy comes and says, you don't look like God to me, right? You hear the word of the Lord, you hear a promise, and you expect this, right? And when it doesn't happen, what do you feel? You feel like pass fail, right? Either it is or it isn't. Either God lied or I screwed up. Who sinned? Who messed up? Somebody else took this away from me. So in my pain, I actually, just like Eve, I say, I will determine what is good in my life. I will determine what is good, what is right. And this is not good. I will be the judge. And what happens is because I have judged what will be God's goodness to me, guess what? When it doesn't happen the way I expect it, it's not good. See, I've set myself up as Lord of my life. And that, what happens in disappointment is it's an opportunity to hear God anew and afresh. God, what is good here? What do you want to do here? What I'm letting go of the past. I'm stepping into the present. What do you want to do now? What is your goodness to me now? I thought your goodness, if I'm Sarah, I thought your goodness would be I'd have kids by that time I'm 66. I'd have grandkids, great grandkids. But I'm not. But rather than write my own story of what goodness looks like, I'm laying down that story and saying, God, what do you want me to know about this? I'm not going to be the arbiter and the judge of what is good. And that allows me to move through grief into new hope.
Yes, sir.
Amen. New hope. And in that place where I'm sitting there, we watch this is you've got Leah, Reuben, Simeon, Leah, and Judah got these kids, right? Well, guess what's happening? Remember how Sarah couldn't have kids? Remember how Rebecca couldn't have kids? Well, guess what? Round three, Rachel can't have kids. Just because you're repeating the patterns of the past doesn't mean they can't end with you. And so what happens is Rachel goes, okay, she gets hope, but unfortunately she learned from Sarah. And she said, well, I'm obviously not getting pregnant. Here, Jacob, take my maidservant. Stupidity skipped a generation, right? But there are two kids, Dan and Naphtali. Now I've got a question. Anybody recognize those two names? What do those two names become? Tribes of the house of Israel. God can't use, apparently he can. Who am I to say what God can or will not use in my life? He will use even my failures as the black velvet to reveal the diamond of his goodness. I don't get to decide what he will bless. Then Leah goes, oh yeah? Well, then I got a maidservant too because I'm not having babies anymore. It's it's like an arms race. You know, or a legs race or a body race. I don't know. Anyway, and so now we got her and we get Gad and Asher. I'm thinking, how can anything good come out of this train wreck? And yet it does. Whew. Keeps on. But Leah's like still not okay with how things are rolling. Neither is Rachel. That lack of okayness, that hurt, is what opens up the door for us to grieve and to hear something new. And guess what? Leah, even after she had quit having babies, suddenly has a few more. There we go. Awesome. Yep. And including a daughter, Dinah. And that is talk about a train wreck of a story. You can read it in Genesis 34. And then finally, Rachel conceives and has a child by the name of Joseph. Yeah. Joseph. Wow, when I look at my life, I want to go, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, right? These relationships, they're dead to me. This situation, right? This is the Garden of Eden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, where I get to choose what is good to me, what God can use. And I put all these people that have hurt me in a cemetery. Masha had a great analogy. She said, sometimes with church, I feel like I'm one of those little country churches, you know, that have about 300 years of dead people out in the cemetery, right? Like roll up to the church and all you see is all the people who used to be here. Maybe that's your life. All the people who used to be in your life are dead to me. Nothing good can come from that. Nothing good. And grief, though, is this declaration. And God lures us out of this numb state, this blame and shame state, because all it does is bring death, doesn't it? Is to this place that said, I am going to lay down my story, my understanding of what's going on, my understanding of what qualifies as good, and I just want what you want for me. Let you be Lord. Not me, because all my being Lord has brought me to a place I don't like. All my attempts to avoid my pain has just left me dead inside. And I want to live. I want to live. I want to feel. I want to hope. And to do that, I've got to give up control of the story, but also the control of other people. If God can bring salvation to the world through that, there's hope. There's hope. Listen, I'm from Kentucky. That's impressive for my Kentucky standards. Like, that's a train wreck. Right? That's a double-wide train wreck. And our story that we're going to continue with next week begins, I want you to keep that story in mind, and I feel flip open in your Bibles, because I want you to see where it starts, and then I want you to be reading ahead with this train wreck in mind. Genesis 37. Now, Jacob, this is the account of Jacob's family line, right? So how does this train wreck turn out good? Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. Oh, by the way, do you guys remember God gave Moses gave Abraham a promise that all the world would be blessed? That's still going on today. It's getting better. But the second part was, he said, I'm going to give you the land you come to. And he got to the land, and God said, yes, but I'm going to give it to your family in 430 years. Anybody already depressed?
Yeah, that's a bad
promise. Yeah. Scott, the Lord is going to bless the state of Georgia in 430 years through you. And one of the things God put his finger on me, because we get weird, we get testimonies from people all over the world who've been blessed by things that came through this church, or people who've left here and they're like, my life was changed forever. And part of my heart goes, bah! Why? If it doesn't happen where I see it in my life, it's not good, right? And God said something to me, and I'm going to tell you, I'm not there yet, so don't test me on this one. I believe it's true, but I'm not there. He said, Peter, if you see me doing something and you can't rejoice, it's a sign there's a hole in your boat. There's a hole in your heart. If you can't rejoice in what God is doing because I've got to determine what is good, there's a problem. Anybody here seen somebody get healed and you didn't get happy? What are some reasons you can see somebody get healed and it not bring joy to your heart? Because it didn't happen for me. Didn't happen the way I expected. Maybe they learned the wrong lesson from it. It was because I was so wonderful. No, it was not. Right? No. If I can't rejoice in what God does, there's a sign, there's a hole in my boat. And it's convicting me hardcore because there's a lot of things that God does I can't rejoice in. And he goes, Anyway. So here's Jacob. They are staying in the land of Canaan as aliens and immigrants. And it said, this is the account. Joseph, a young man of 17, wise, full of wisdom, understanding, totally understood everything, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. Now, who were Bilhah and Zilpah? The maidservants, right? Okay, who here's from a blended family or part of a blended family? This is for you, okay? This is blended family dynamics. How do you think the children of the maidservants ranked with all the other brothers? Right? I mean, yeah. So, I mean, you've watched Days of Our Lives. So, I mean, this is what we're looking at, right? We're looking at a train wreck. We're looking at, and so, what do you think their attitude is? So in the ranking of inheritances, they're going to get the short end of the stick no matter what. So how much do you think they're interested in investing in the family business? Yeah. You think they have some attitude problems? Then watching all the fighting between moms? Anyway, good grief. You know, seeing your own mom being weaponized by this. Is that a step mom? I don't know what that is in that situation. But anyway, it said that the sons of these two maidservants, that was Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, his father's wives, and he was out there and he brought his father a bad report about them. Tattletale, what are you talking about? He's just concerned about the family business. So he may be 17, but obviously he hasn't grown a lot of wisdom yet, right? Because I am the youngest, and I can tell you, there's things you do and things you don't do if you want to survive in this life. There's ways to handle things, and there's ways not to handle things. And there's more of them. There's four of them. And there's little old you. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age. And he made an ornate robe for him. And when his brothers saw it, think Gucci. He went out and got him, you know, got a custom-made suit, just looking studly. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any other of them. In other words, remember the birth order? He's going to jump to the head of the line. How dare you? It can't be good in my life if you get promoted over me. That cannot be good. You're wrong. You're evil. And when his brothers saw that, they said they hated him, and they could not speak a kind or a word of peace, a word, anything good about him, to him. Now Joseph had a dream. Oh, good, God's getting involved. This is going to be amazing. It's going to be wonderful. He's going to get a word from heaven, and everything's going to change. Who here, you got that word from God, and everything just changed? You know, it was like joining the ice capades, just slip sliding away. All right. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. Joseph doesn't seem to be learning from his experience. Okay, let me ask you a question. Who here is on Team Joseph at this point, and who's on the other team? Okay, who's on the other team? You're like, I get why they're ticked off at it. Okay, haters. Okay, it's like when you tell the story of the prodigal son, you can always tell people like, yeah, but I see the older brother's point of view. I'm just saying, right? Like, yeah, I get it. It's unfair. And the father has set this up. The father is to blame. The mothers are to blame. And the kids are just reaping the mess, huh? Yeah. Okay, who here, because of everything that's been done to you by other people, that's your excuse for stupidity? Okay, so slowly people are realizing what I'm talking about, right? I wouldn't be this way if it wasn't for you. Listen, other people's stupidity is not an excuse for yours. You still have the ability to agree with Jesus, but not if you go to this route. Jesus, what do you want me to know? I'm hurting. I'm rejected. I think Joseph was just, he was like, I had a dream. Isn't this wonderful? He didn't have anybody to share it with. He shares it. But listen to the dream. See if you can tell what it means. He said to them, listen to this dream I had. You and I, we were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. What do you think it means? Anybody here tried to get other people to see in you what God sees in you?
Come on.
It doesn't work, does it? It really doesn't. No, it's in here. Really? I'm not seeing it, right? And his brother said to him, do you intend to reign over us? And by the way, this word reign appears at the end of chapter 36 over and over and over again. And it's for ruling dictators, dominating and controlling people. It's not, are you going to have a position, but are you going to really dominate and control us? The promise of God gets flipped. See, leadership is to bless others. And what they hear the word on his life to bless them is the, which is what God's saying to them, was saying to Joseph, I am going to raise you up to bless your family. What they heard was you're going to try to dominate and control us and use us. Unfortunately, I think Joseph might have thought that too at this point, right? Anybody, you heard the word of the Lord and you fantasized about what it would look like? And when you got further down the road, you realized it didn't look like any of those things? Here's where we end. Said, then he had another dream and got smart and decided not to tell anybody. Wrong. And he told it to his brothers. Listen, he said. Remember, guys, what did Mary do when she heard the word of the Lord over her life? She treasured all these things where? in her heart. Where is life incubated? Within. Then he had another dream and he told it to his brother. He said, listen. And they're like, do we have a choice? He said, I had another dream. This time the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. Which, by the way, in the ancient world, the sun is the father, the mother is the moon. That's just standard. When he told, so they didn't, that did not go well, right? So what does he do? He ropes in dad. And he told his father as well. Just to get him ready. You know, if he needed to do some calisthenics. What is this dream? His father rebuked and said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So I'm going to start something here because you have homework this week. I have homework this week. Every single one of us have words of our lives, whether we know it or not. They are the deep desires God has put in our hearts. They're the things that feel impossibly true and that at present there is little to no evidence of coming to pass. Anybody?
Yeah.
Blink twice. Okay. Good. You're in the right place. God does not give us dreams that we can achieve in and of ourselves. He gives us dreams that only He can achieve in and through us. As we renounce the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and say, not my will, but yours be done. And part of that requires is that we sit in our grief. Now, if we could slip up to the very first slides. Thank you, bro. The very first slides are, we talked about this. We're in this season right now of rain. We talked about this. You know, the interesting thing is, the next season is going to be flood, but this season is a season of rain. And I thought, well, that's really weird. I get why rain is grief, but I realized something. If you have been through a drought and you have a heavy rain, what happens to the soil? Wash it away. It actually depletes the land of nutrients, and the water just dissipates. What do you first, what kind of rain do you have to have first before the downpour? A gentle soaking rain. Why? Because it opens up the soil to receive what is about to come. You and I, our hearts are hard because of disappointment and grief. Our hearts are hard. Who knows what I'm talking about? I don't hear, right? Okay, if I'm Joseph at this point, do I think God's going to bless me through my family? I don't. I want a new family. We'll find out at the end of the story, God still fulfills his word to his family. God, and there's signs throughout this that Joseph is grieving this, but we'll get to that. God has a purpose and a hope for all of us. And a lot of times we want to just cut, bail, and move away, but God's saying no. In fact, we have to let go of the past to be able to open up to receive with the new that is coming. Let me tell you, I'm telling you again, this second half of this year is a season of massive increase in our lives. But if we're not ready for it, it will wipe away the nutrients of the soil. If our hearts are hard, if we failed to grieve the past, if we fail to forgive and release those who've harmed us, if we fail to let go of the expectations we had, of the words God had over our lives, if we fail to give those up and say, I don't get to be the arbiter of what's good for me, but you, God, your will for me is better than I can ever imagine. Unless we do that, we will be unable to receive what he's sending our way. And we may end up worse for it. And so my question for you is, I will tell you this. We are in a season when it is good to grieve. But grief hurts. Grief feels wrong, feels broken, feels messed up. Listen, not a single one of us is sitting in the fullness of what God promised us. Therefore, every single one of us have things that we have to grieve. Because it's not the way we expected. And we're disappointed and hurt and heartbroken. But if we will allow God to melt our frozen hearts, our numb hearts, and to melt them and begin to feel the pain, the discomfort, and not come up with a story to make sense of it. If we'll let go of that story, God can write a new story for us. So, as I said, your homework this week is let God begin to thaw your heart and let God begin to speak new things over your story. You also get points if you read ahead in the story of Joseph. If we could have the worship team come up. Not normally we don't end in such a heavy spot. But I'm going to tell you this. Nobody can do the work that only you can do. Only you can do this work of saying yes to God, saying, God, I'm surrendering my story. I'm surrendering my understanding of what is good in my life. You must be Lord. I've been Lord of my life. I've been the one determining what's good. I've been the one who said, you've been bad to me, God. And it doesn't work. I'm saying, God, I'm laying it all down at the foot of the cross and saying, God, not my will, but yours be done. I'm done being Lord of my life. I'm done being the arbiter of what is good. And God, I'm no longer going to say, you can't go there. Some of you, you've been feeling him guiding your gaze to some deeply wounded places in your heart, deeply wounded relationships. You're like, nope, we're not going there. I don't get to determine where God points me. We can stand. Lord, you are Lord of all. You must be Lord even of the cemetery of my heart.
Jaira, you are enough. God, you are enough. I just keep seeing this picture of Father God just holding us like as a little kid who is just so hurt. And I feel like we just need to stay in the Father's arms and to allow ourselves to fall apart and just to kind of grieve and cry out and just as we're starting to feel the pain and just starting to feel in our hearts like so many of us have been numb and just frozen for so long that we have not felt anything. We're like, yay, great. But it's like you couldn't feel love. You couldn't feel life. You've just been frozen. You've been numb. I've been numb. And it's like just to get into his arms and just to fall apart and just say, no, I'm not okay. I'm so hurt. I am so hurt. And I'm just not okay. And Father, I just don't know what to do with it, but just to be in the safety of his arms. I just feel like his arms are around you. His arms are around me to hold us as we grieve, as we process, as we let go of our story, as we let go of everything that has not gone according to our expectation. And start to just like have a glimmer of hope. A glimmer of hope, just saying, oh my gosh, it's not like I expected. It's not what I wanted. And I don't even know if I want anything anymore because I just want to take my toys and go home. But Father God, I just open myself up. Just if it's you right now, just say, Father God, I just open myself up right now with all of my disappointments, with everything that has gone not according to plan, with everyone who's hurt me. I just open myself up again for you to just take that pain, to take those expectations, to take those disappointments, to unfreeze my heart, to make me alive again, to make me feel again, to make me breathe again.
You know, what I didn't tell you is on Friday when I was hurting so bad and I was so tempted to spiral into shame and making up my own stories, Dan Berthold reached out and said, how you doing? And I said, not good. He said, you want to talk? I said, sure. I swung by his house and we sat and just had coffee. And I'll tell you what, I was just real. I didn't vomit everything, but at the same time, I was just real with where I'm at. But guess what? Just doing that with him stopped me from making up stories. It stopped me from making up it brought me back to God's perspective. Listen, we're not supposed to do this alone. That's how we got here in the first place. We got to listen. You can't do it on your own. You're going to get sucked into your grief and begin to worship it. You've got to grieve with others. You've got to invite other people in, not people who are going to be like, yeah, let's ride. I'll kill them too. No, not those people. No, listen. No, people who will sit with you and not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, but simply say, I know God is good. I'm going to sit with you in that. So, Father, I just ask right now that you would speak to each of us. Who is that safe person we can grieve with? But Lord, that we would not shove all this back in to try to duct tape ourselves together to be okay to go out into the world. But rather, we would say, God, I'm not going to be okay until you make it okay. I'm not going to be okay until you make it okay. And I'm not going to dumb it down to some level of numbness, but I'm going to let you have your way in me.
For more information, go to ariselife.org or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.